Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, it's been another one of those weeks.
Another week.
Another one of those weeks. I feel like we're going on 6 years of it being
But at least we've been together.
At least we've been together. That's all that matters.
Honestly.
The friends we made along the way.
Yeah.
Fun show today. We kind of run the gamut.
Always do.
Always do. We get to talk about kind of smaller developments around abortion that are nevertheless enraging on a large scale.
Trump's going down to Atlanta to try to give Fani Willis the stink eye.
Oh, God. Does he need to? Can't he just do the stink eye from home?
It's not enough for him. Erin, he's got nothing else to do. He's running for president.
He's got to waste the jet fuel flying around like Taylor Swift going 13 miles. And then we're also talking to Bess Kalb.
Yep.
Author, writer, TV writer extraordinaire, and longtime pal of the show, Kieran Deal, about self-promotion, whether it's a drag, whether it's good, whether it's always been this way, whether we're all influencers now. Plus, a soothing chaser of Sani Petty to end your hour and a half with us or so and get you started on the right foot for the rest of the week. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who are genuinely sad that Toby Keith died not knowing Beyoncé was about to release a country album.
It's a tough one.
I know. You know, Phyllis Schlafly died thinking Hillary Clinton would be president. So
I guess you take the wins where you can get them.
You take the wins where you can get them. Okay. So let's talk. I mean, it's the Super Bowl's over. One thing I love about the Super Bowl is it's kind of like Christmas. It's like once it's over, everyone's like, get it out of here.
It's done. Be gone. I can't see one more picture of Travis Kelce in a sequin suit making out with Taylor Swift listening to her own music. It's
indeed
too much.
The wad has been blown. We're closing the monitor. But, you know, after Sunday's Super Bowl, President Biden tweeted a photo of himself with laser eyes, implying that the internet-bred character of Dark Brandon had somehow fixed the outcome of the game, playfully, of course. The fact that millions of people immediately knew what this meant means that millions of people, including me, maybe especially me, desperately need to log off.
We all need
to log off. Solar flare, come save us. Knock all the electronics out. It will be dicey for a few weeks, but we'll figure it out. But Biden wasn't the only politician outside of the extremely online demographic who toyed around with internet conspiracy theories like surrounding Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, Pfizer, the NFL, trying to defeat Donald Trump somehow. I don't know. It's very convoluted. But Minnesota Governor Tim Walz also got in on the action and made some jokes about fixing the Super Bowl. Alyssa, there are a few ways to handle a ridiculous conspiracy theory. You can ignore it, pretend it doesn't exist. You can attempt to debunk it with sincere things like fact-checking,
which
I think lends it a little bit of more dignity than it deserves.
Yeah.
Or you can engage with it sarcastically, like what Democrats seem increasingly okay with doing now. What do you make of this?
I am into engaging sarcastically because it's kind of like if you don't engage at all, you're letting it just happen, like with no counter whatsoever, right? It's like, and we've seen what happens when you're like, ugh, you guys, Donald Trump and COVID, China. I mean, there are so many conspiracy theories. Well, some that actually turned out to be true, but I think that trying to debunk them is a waste of time. The people you're trying to educate aren't listening to you, don't want to hear from you. So I say just enjoy yourself. I say enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Engage playfully.
Yeah, you know that whole, I don't even know if this is true, but you're not supposed to wake somebody who's sleepwalking.
I'm sure I've seen that on the internet.
I feel like, I don't know if it's true or not. Any sleep scientists, doctors of sleepology can go ahead and weigh in, hysteria@crooked.com. But I feel like that principle applies to people who are really in deep on like LARPing their conspiracy theories, like QAnon people, essentially sleepwalkers. You can't wake them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
I can't believe
you just said LARP and I knew what that meant.
We both need to log off. No, LARPing is live action. Therefore, it is
live action role play.
By definition.
The reason I know what it is because when I was an assistant at an internet company in 1999, my boss used to have these LARP events, and I had to find him places on Long Island to rent for his LARP events.
Oh, my God. Are you like Rasputin of
seen it all. Well, seen it all, Erin.
You're just like showing up in the background of all these photos of historic 100%. Events. And it's like, wait, why was she there? And then
why is she dressed like a gnome on Long Island at a mansion?
Okay, so this week, in addition to, you know, on the Extremely Online beat, Joe Biden joined TikTok, which we hope we've got some good security on that iPhone 1.
I'm guessing it's not on his iPhone.
No, it's probably not. And I'm guessing that he is probably not the one that is composing, editing.
I think that's correct. I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah. Well, on TikTok, he is, according to a really good piece on Slate, quote, an online character with edgelord posting flair and crypto king visuals, a political communicator's take on Gritty. You know who Gritty is, right?
No.
Please Google Gritty after we are done recording, because
I will. I was going to when I was reading the outline, but I was like, you know what? Aaron's going to ask me, and I want to be honest. No, I don't.
Gritty is the chaos Muppet that declared himself president for life of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Oh, I know Gritty. Okay, thank you. I do know Gritty.
Okay, an attempted reclamation. Okay, so this, I'm going back to the Slate piece. The Slate piece also said that Biden's online persona is an attempted reclamation of narrative after years of MAGA memes. Okay, so I'm old enough to remember when President Biden was considering banning TikTok because of security concerns stemming from its ties to China. So, Alyssa, do you think this is a good idea that the president joined TikTok?
I mean, look, on the one hand, Erin, you got to meet the people where they are, right? Like, when we were in the White House, I was so violently opposed to Barack Obama doing Between Two Ferns. I was like, this is so unpresidential. What are we doing? And it was actually Pfeiffer's idea to do. And I think it has like 25 million views today. So I was definitely wrong about that. So I feel like get on TikTok, meet the people where they are. But I would be shocked. Okay, look. The people who they want to meet on TikTok do not give a shit, I think, about what he's posting. I think the people who are going to find him on TikTok are people like me who are like, oh, that's a cute video.
Yeah. And TikTok is not the same as Between Two Ferns because it's a lot more interactive, you know?
Yes, true. The commenting and all.
The comments take a lot more center stage. The top comments, according to the Slate piece, the top comments on Biden's first TikTok were, I can't afford gas or rent.
Mm-hmm.
8 hours edited down to 30 seconds. Good job answering those questions. I know it's hard. Had to wake him up for this one. And what about Rafa?
That tracks. That's about what I would expect.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. TikTok is a place where, on one hand, you can reach Gen Z, but on the other hand, Gen Z can reach you. And I don't think that Joe Biden has done a lot to successfully message to Gen Z that he has done things that address their specific politics and their specific needs.
Well, maybe he will use TikTok for that.
Maybe. I mean, maybe. Or he could use executive orders to do it. And then, like, you know, TikTok himself signing them like, hey, guys.
Oh, you here's came something. In spicy today. You I'm came sorry. In spicy.
Here's something that can materially benefit you that I am doing with my power as the president. I got to say this, Alyssa.
Tell me. I'm here.
Of course I'm voting for Joe Biden. And of course I understand how serious this election is. But I saw a Instagram post, because I'm a millennial, I'm on Instagram, you know. I saw an Instagram post from Vice President Harris that was like, if Congress passes an abortion ban, rest assured, President Biden will veto it. And I'm like,
I saw that too.
That is,
and you know what?
Sauce.
I saw it late and I didn't send it to you because I'm like, you can't send terrorism late at night.
It's too late for that. Thank you. I appreciate
You're
that, Alyssa.
It's too late. It's
That's
too
the
late.
Sort of thing that, like, it's just like, okay, on one hand, I feel like they're dancing around something that they're not coming out directly and saying.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that I think there is a real fear among Democrats that we'll lose the House and Senate in the fall. And if that happens and Joe Biden gets reelected, then he is literally the only thing standing between us and a nationwide abortion ban. Now, just saying, like, if Congress passes an abortion ban, Biden will veto it. I think if you're somebody who casually pays attention to politics or who's like maybe slightly more than casually pays attention, you might be like,
sounds good.
Okay. Like, all right, cool. But I think it's like, if you want to run on abortion, you have to hit harder how close we are to a nationwide abortion ban. You're not protected in your blue little silos.
Right. It's time to start talking about all the things that actually could be done and putting some real fucking legwork, some elbow grease into it and figuring it out. Like, Erin, I haven't really even heard, and we've talked about it and we will talk about it from now until the election. But like, I don't know. Let's fucking put some muscle behind ratifying the ERA. Let's do something. Yeah. Like right now, it's just a lot of tiles on Instagram, Gen X, but also on Instagram. Good to meet you. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of like, we're going to codify Roe. How? You keep saying how?
We've gone from codifying Roe to stopping them from banning abortion, which is not the same, like vetoing an abortion ban. And that is so breathtakingly close to a nationwide abortion ban. Like, okay, right now, women in Texas who need abortion care, for the most part, are getting it by traveling out of state. Not everybody is getting it, as we discussed on last week's episode. People who are already at the margins and already probably are not economically equipped to handle raising a child are being forced to give birth. And pretty much everybody else is just getting them out of state. If a nationwide abortion ban passes, we're fucked, man.
Fucked.
We're fucked. We're driving to Mexico. We're driving to Canada. This is like some bullshit, like retro and—
Fundamental. It's like fundamental bullshit, too.
Yes.
It is a component part of our lives. This isn't some frivolous. This is fundamental bullshit.
And I wish that, you know, I'm sure that this is coming. I hope that this is coming. I'm giving the Biden campaign the benefit of the doubt and hoping that this is coming. But I think that they need to go a little bit harder on being like, guys— They are going to ban abortion.
It's happening.
If they win the Senate and the House. The Senate map is very bad for Democrats this cycle. Not impossible, but it's
hard.
It's looking rough. And the House is so gerrymandered all to fuck that, like, there is a possibility of Democrats taking the House back, but we can't count on that. We have to plan around the fact that there is a very real possibility that Republicans could take both houses of the legislature, which is a suboptimal outcome, but there's a possibility of that. And if that happens, the president is the only thing standing in between us and a nationwide abortion ban.
Yes.
And, like, so—
You heard it here first.
I mean, I'm sure—I'm sorry to speak to some of people's deepest fears, but, you know, that's, like—
That's the news.
Got to give it to you straight. Speaking of abortion, let's do a roundup of what's going on.
Speaking of abortion and Texas.
And Texas. God, what, can Texas just secede?
But you know what? This one, though, extremely other level.
This one is really other level. So, like, late last week, this was kind of making the rounds online, and I really wanted to talk about this individual case because I think it brings a lot of things into relief. A Texas man recently received a slap on the wrist for doing something that had a doctor or woman done it. Would have elicited a much harsher punishment.
Much, much harsher.
It wasn't talking in a meeting. Mason Herring, 39, who's a Texas personal injury lawyer, which is an ironic job to have for someone who's going around trying to, personally injure people.
Yeah.
Whatever. Herring drugged his wife's drinks with abortifacients in 7 unsuccessful attempts to induce an abortion without the knowledge of his then estranged, now ex-wife, who was at the time in her 3rd trimester of pregnancy. Okay, so he was trying to— Okay, first of all, abortion drugs, not recommended for the 3rd trimester. You're supposed to take them before, like, 11 weeks.
No.
Yeah, not recommended for the 3rd, for even the 2nd trimester. Oh, my God.
This is, it's like reading the story was fucking gross.
It's gross, and Herring is a gross person. And Herring was convicted of the crimes of injury of a child and assault of a pregnant person, but originally faced the more serious charges of assault to induce abortion. He pled down to get the less serious charges.
Mm-hmm.
His punishment is 180 days in jail and 10 years probation. His ex-wife, Catherine, understandably found this sentence insufficient. Alyssa, if a doctor tried to perform an illegal abortion in Texas, because that's what Herring was doing. He was trying to perform
100%.
An illegal abortion. an illegal abortion against the woman's will. Like, okay. Yep. But if a doctor tried to perform an illegal abortion with the permission of the pregnant person, aka any abortion that occurs after fetal cardiac activity around 6 weeks from a woman's last menstrual period, that doctor could face penalties of up to 99 years in jail and a $100,000 fine. So I guess if you need an abortion in Texas, the best way to avoid stiff legal penalties is just have your non-doctor husband do it without telling you.
Erin, okay, so many things about this story. One, disgusting. Sorry, this is attempted murder. He dosed her 7 fucking times. Like she had to have been so sick. Like he watched her get so sick every time he dosed her. My favorite part of the story is that the way he finally told on himself was that he took the garbage out and she was like, "Zoinks, Scoob, something is up. He
this
never takes the
help.
Garbage out. He is not a helper." And she went to the garbage and found the Mexican generic of misoprostol. Erin, what? He had to have been like, "I'm going to watch some old Lifetime movies from the 1990s and see how you try to poison someone." Because he just kept bringing her glasses of water when she already had drinks. And he was like, "No, you're dehydrated. Drink more." And then, what he did is almost like a Muppet. It's like a Muppet-like caper, what he was trying to pull off. A malevolent one. But the really just the part that makes you get a pit in your stomach is that if this had been months earlier, she had not wanted this pregnancy. She had tried to procure these drugs herself. She'd be in prison for a really fucking long time, but he's okay. So again, Texas.
Yeah. I mean, it really goes to show who lawmakers think should be in control of women's bodies.
And who are victims.
And it's, yeah. So here's the really tragic epilogue of the story in addition to the whole, like, meta patriarchy of it all.
Right.
Catherine Herring gave birth to a little girl who was born 10 weeks premature and had to spend 117 days of the first 9 months of her life in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who's ever had a NICU baby knows that that is, like, every day.
It's like a lifetime.
The hardest day of your life.
Yeah.
And she had to live it 117 days in a row. The little girl is now 18 months old and has developmental delays that have required her to attend therapy 8 times a week.
8 times.
And misoprostol, I'm going to say, is in studies, if you take misoprostol, because it's used for other things besides abortion, it's used for like internal bleeding, it's ulcers, you know, there's other things that it's used for. But if you take it without knowing you're pregnant and the pregnancy doesn't end, it's known to cause some birth defects. And so Herring says that her husband dosing her multiple times with an abortifacient is what caused this. And 180 days in jail for this guy.
And who's helping her? Who's helping her? This has to be exceedingly expensive, or nearly bankruptingly expensive, what she's going through.
You know, I found this guy's details still on his law firm's website. Mm. Like, he hasn't lost his law license yet that I know of, but he's probably going to lose it. But yeah, every single penny that he's ever earned should go to care of this little girl.
100%.
Every single penny. And he should also get a tattoo on his forehead, I think. I think if you do something like this.
That says creep?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Goon.
Goon. Like, he should get a tattoo on his forehead that says goon. He should be barred from practicing law.
Without question.
And every single woman in America should sign on to an agreement to never date or even get anywhere near the penis of this man for the rest of his life.
Ever.
Ever. Okay, moving on. Wow.
Whoa.
What's happening in Ohio, Alyssa?
Some wild fuckery. You know, Erin, we always tell people, like, just take the W. Okay, Republicans cannot take a decision by a majority of citizens as anything other than a challenge to try to overturn the will of the people. So we have talked about Ohio. We talked about issue 1, which was voted on back in November. And Erin, that was supposed to protect abortion access in the state. And you know, it passed with a 57% majority.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Republicans in the state continue to ignore what the people want and have explicitly voted for. As a reminder to everyone, Issue 1 explicitly stated, quote, every individual has the right to make and carry out one's own reproductive decisions, including but not limited to decisions on contraception, fertility treatment, continuing one's own pregnancy, miscarriage care, and abortion. And again, this one with 57% of the vote. Well, the Ohio Attorney General, he believes that some of the abortion ban still stands, Aaron. He thinks there are parts that are still salvageable. His name, Dave Yost, said the Heartbeat Act, which would prevent abortions at 6 weeks and beyond, is no longer valid, but other parts of the ban may still be defensible.
How?
Well, Aaron, he said on Friday, Issue 1 doesn't say the state absolutely has no right to regulate reproductive rights. Okay.
But it says people have the right to make their own decisions, ergo the state does not get to tell them that they cannot make those decisions. This is so dumb. Why?
So he's got the abortion ban is on hold. It's being ironed out. Hamilton County Common Pleas Court Judge Christian Jenkins has to hear the arguments. But Aaron, I would just like to point out a little research that I hope someone in Ohio is listening to us and reminds them of the fact that in literature and analysis released prior to the November election, A.G. Yost said, some of Ohio's laws may be defensible, but the Heartbeat Act would not exist if Issue 1 passes. Those were his words.
Okay, look, Ohio, I was so impressed with you on two off-year elections, one special election in August, showing up in record numbers in the off-year election in November, legalizing marijuana and enshrining abortion access into your state constitution. Amazing. Stop voting for these motherfuckers. Stop voting for them. They're making you look like a bunch of goons, to bring it back to, like, they're not representing.
Question.
They're clearly not representing you. They're clearly
not
representing
you. They
don't
care what
interest.
You said. They don't care.
No. And so, like, the voters have spoken, and instead A.G. Yost is like, We better ask a judge about this.
Let's go line by line. That's what he wants to do, Aaron. He wants to go provision by provision and take each provision before a judge and see what is constitutional.
That is
trash.
I feel like Republicans in places like Ohio and Wisconsin, which I'll get to in a second, they're like a moth banging against a screen. Like, I'm going to keep trying to get in. Maybe I'll get in. It's really annoying. It's like, stop banging. There's a screen there. But every once in a while, they find a hole in the screen, and then you got a fucking moth in your house eating all your sweaters.
Which is really bad.
But, like, they're depending on people tuning out because they think, okay,
and getting exhausted.
Or just being like, that's that. We did it. Mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. You know, mission not accomplished. This is going to be, because these people are such enduring and eternal fucking pains in the ass. We have to pay attention forever. Like, there is no way, like, you cannot turn your back on a giant fucking pain in the ass, because eventually they're going to figure out a way to get what they want when you're not paying attention.
Totally.
And it sucks. And I hate it. Yeah. And speaking of, I mentioned Wisconsin. It looks like Governor Tony Evers' maps are actually going to go into effect, because the Republican legislature was like, oh, fine.
Woo!
Yeah. I feel like they've got to have another game, though, because
They're subversive. They're not being altruistic here.
No, I don't think so. But maybe they have. Maybe they've got bigger fish to fry. Let's go to Missouri, where the news is not good. Republicans in Missouri continue their record-setting run of showing their whole asses. Democrats in the state are trying to add exceptions for rape and incest to the state's draconian abortion ban.
Those animals.
They're absolute. But as you know, Alyssa, and as I know, exceptions are not really exceptions. A ban is a ban is a ban is a ban is a ban.
It's flowery letters.
Exceptions are little fairy tales
that
Republicans tell moderates who want to break in their taxes to get them to vote for them so those moderates can sleep at night.
Right. It's like when they do an exception for the life of the mother, and the caveat is like, right, you must actually be near death. You must have five doctors certify that. You must have lost like half your blood, and then maybe we'll give you the exception. But by then you might be dead because it took us too long to prove that you were dying.
We need lawyers to stop trying to do science. It makes me, it's like, you guys, come on. Please, you don't understand what you're trying to make rules about. And you sound very stupid to people who understand the underlying science.
Like doctors.
Yeah, like doctors. Okay, so the Missouri GOP has also tried to push a bill that would prevent Planned Parenthood from taking Medicaid reimbursements. That failed. Planned Parenthood provides many services besides just abortion, and in many cases, in many places, is the first place that women are able to go for a whole array of reproductive health care and services. And Republicans in Missouri have drafted an amendment that would prevent anyone who's ever gotten an abortion—
This is wild.
—from accessing Medicaid ever.
Yep.
Ever. Is that—can you do that? Can you, like—
No, Erin, what?
Can you, like, dust for an abortion? Like, can you go, like, give a—like, during—can you do, like, a little, you know, magnifying glass down on the old cervix and tell somebody—
I'm not sure how it works. I'm not sure how that works.
Ladies, lie. Lie about everything. Lie about it. You didn't have an abortion. No, you didn't. Nope. No, you didn't. Gaslight people.
Don't know
people.
What you're talking about.
Do, like, play it like a Republican would. Just fucking lie. Lie just to get what you want. This is just,
lie.
Ugh.
Don't tell them.
Yeah, Missouri is the show-your-ass state. We've got another kind of disturbing story. Alyssa.
This one fucked me up, Erin. Thank God for Ron Wyden, senator from Oregon. He is investigating.
This is dystopian.
This is really fucked up. So Senator Ron Wyden alleges that a company is tracking people's visits to almost 600 Planned Parenthood locations across 48 states and gave that data for one of the largest anti-abortion ad campaigns in the country, a scope that far exceeds anything previously known. So Wyden released a letter. The letter was sent Tuesday morning, and it reveals what's believed to be the largest publicly known location-driven anti-abortion ad campaign. Abortion rights supporters have feared this type of data could be used by certain state governments to prosecute women who get the procedure after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled there's no constitutional right to an abortion. So here is some wild shit. This is where it gets even more wild, in my opinion. The company is called Near Intelligence, which Wyden has asked the Federal Trade Commission and the Securities and Exchange Commission to investigate claims to have information on 1.6 billion people across 44 countries. Now, one of the interesting things about this, too, they did have to stop tracking people in Europe, Erin, because... Not Americans, though. Not Americans. Because we lack federal privacy regulations. Hmm. So Europeans, they were like, you know, Near Intelligence, get the fuck out of here. But they're still doing what they do.
They're still tracking the shit out of us.
And I'm sorry, but Erin, how is tracking people's visits to Planned Parenthood clinics, selling that data to target people for an anti-abortion campaign, how is that not intimidation and, like, I don't know, stalking?
It does sound like intimidation and stalking, and it also sounds like a really disturbing link on a chain that could lead to people actually being victimized by violence.
Yes.
Or doxxed to their employers or their partners or their families, and that is, oof, yeah, I don't like that. I mean, like, look, if they're tracking your phone and you go to Planned Parenthood, I don't know, to just, like, drop off a hoagie to the front desk staff because they're, you know—
Doing
the Lord's work.
You're going to volunteer.
Right. Mm. Let's say you go to Planned Parenthood. You're going to volunteer. You're going to support a friend. You're going to have a procedure that has nothing to do with abortion.
You're going to have a pap smear.
You're going to have an abortion. Whatever you're going to Planned Parenthood for, if somebody can track your phone, they can also see that one of those people is going to work at a specific workplace. It wouldn't be very hard for them to figure out who you are and what you're doing.
Or where you live.
This is gross. We need federal privacy protections. You know, John Oliver did that thing where he bought a bunch of data on people who were, like, coming and going from the U.S. Capitol. I honestly think that the only way that we get any good tech regulations is when it directly impacts elected officials. Like, no shade to the people who are doing this, because I think that there are good— I think that they have good reasons for sure. writing this law. But last week we talked about Senators Amy Klobuchar and Josh Hawley teaming up to do an anti-deep fake legislation. Right. And I feel like anti-deep fake legislation might succeed in the Senate and the House, because politicians understand how deep fakes could hurt them.
Yep.
By, you know, it could be used in campaigns against them. There is a very palpable fear of deep fakes being used against politicians. Indonesia just had an election that involved deep fakes during the campaign.
Oh, yeah, that's wild.
And we still don't know, like, how that impacted the outcome of the election. So deep fakes are a real palpable fear for elected officials. In order for privacy to become something that they actually move on, like, there's going to have to be more John Oliver-like projects of people buying up data of elected officials and selling it or publishing it. I'm sorry. I hate to be like a bomb thrower, but that's how I
feel. No, but bomb thrower's fine. Hey, look, if that's what it takes.
Yeah. God, we need federal federal privacy regulations so badly.
So badly.
And I feel like half of our elected officials have their assistants print out their email. Like, they're in that age demographic. So
I almost choked on my water. Yes, I agree with you.
Okay, yeah. And they like asked to had the for the map quest before they drive to—
Yeah, you can know. You print out the map quest?
Print out the map quest. We got a Fonnie Willis update. People might be hearing this on a crazy day.
Fonnie. Trump trial drama continues on the day this episode airs, Thursday the 15th. America's favorite and most prolific criminal, Donald Trump, is set to attend a hearing in Atlanta about the allegations against District Attorney Fonnie Willis, which state that she had an inappropriate relationship with Trump prosecuting attorney Nathan Wade. Aaron, this is so grossly, obviously, like, just the most basic play in the Trump playbook. It's like, let's go intimidate. Like, we've heard all the stories of how he spoke to Robbie Kaplan, who defended E. Jean, throwing papers at her, saying, see you next Tuesday. He wants to go down and try to, like, scare the shit out of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, why else is he going? He's got, like, other trials going on. He's supposed to be at other trials that day.
Yeah, he's got other parties to hit up. He's going to just run through with a bottle of wine.
He is. And the thing is, this is boring. Earlier this month, Willis acknowledged a personal relationship with Wade, but denied that it has tainted the proceedings. So at the very heart here, we have Fulton County Court Judge Scott McAfee, who said he's going to just focus on whether or not Willis benefited financially from hiring Wade, when their relationship began, and whether it continues. Okay, like, Donald Trump, what do you need to be there for? Like, no reason for him to go except to just try to be a threatening goon. That's our theme for today.
I think he just wants to draw attention, because anything that— this is a story he wants to draw attention to. So by standing close to it, he's trying to, like, use his gravitational field.
Right.
And it's going to work, because that's what people do. They pay attention to whatever it is that he does. Yeah, and that's unfortunate. Okay,
snooze.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back— personal, political.
Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there. Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for human personal brands. Mm. Our first panelist is a regular friend of Hysteria. She's a comedian, actor, writer, and director, Karen Deal. Great to see your face.
Great to see your face. Happy Valentine's Day.
Ooh, do you have anything special planned?
Just a lot of masturbation.
So that's what all the buzz is about. Our next panelist is a writer and producer of TV and books. She just released a kid's book called Buffalo Fluffalo, but if that's a bit below your reading level or above, you can keep up with our newsletter, The Grudge Report. Please welcome Bess Kalb.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm a fan of the podcast, and I got the buzz joke halfway through your intro to me. So this is going to go great. I'm feeling sharp as a tack.
Oh, man. Sick kids.
Yeah.
Lots of fun.
Yeah, that's my
everybody
Valentine's.
Loves having, everybody loves having sick kids. So, Bess, congrats on the book.
Thank you so much. It's shortlisted for a Nobel Prize.
Have you beaten Taylor Swift yet, though?
Oh, my God. You've been following. Okay. No. So Taylor Swift.
Of course I've been following.
You've been following the indie bookstore children's lit drama. Taylor Swift has the number one book. I have the number two. And we beat Goodnight Moon. And our next victim is this is perfect audio. Our next victim is Taylor Swift. I feel like that'll win over. The publisher's going to love this. Yeah. No, we'll beat
her.
We'll get her.
Can she stop? That's my question.
No.
She's great at this one thing. She's really, really, really good at it. Does she need to do the other stuff?
You know, she can. You know, it's like Everest. Why climb Everest? It's there. You know, she'll just do it. If she can beat anyone at something, she will, and she should. To be very clear, fan of Taylor Swift, and she deserves all the success. Also, she didn't write this book. It's like a My Lil Bio. I'm getting the title wrong, but it's like a My Biography of Taylor Swift written by other people. I don't even know if it's authorized, but yeah, I'll never have the number one book so long as she breathes. This is getting, it is just sounding more and more like a death threat. No, love her, love the book.
Where is the bomb? Where is it, like on the bottom of her car?
So,
what are you really planning?
I am going to unplug the computer. I quit. No, it's in, she'll never know. Why would I? When does this air?
Tomorrow. Busy. She's busy. This is a busy week for her. Bess, how much of the book's promotion, and like you've written other books too, how much of every book's promotion are you expected to do yourself? Just give our listeners a sense of like the grunt work of an author once you're done writing.
I've always been excited to do promotion for a book because I'm not somebody with like a built-in fan base, so I hope that like the book gets put out there in the press. In terms of me being the face of that, I don't know how much is expected of me. I know when the contract was being negotiated, I specifically asked them not to have like a specific amount of Instagram posts. Some authors have to deal with that indignity and are required to have themselves talk about it, but I don't know what was expected of me. I do want to move units. I want to sell the book, and I want to be helpful to do it. But figuring out how to do that has been kind of a balancing act.
Yeah. So there's people who have to like tweet about it a certain number of times, or not. I mean, not you, but oh my god.
Yeah. That's part of it. I think you know in the Vox article that was sent over. A lot of the people who are given book deals because of their social media following are required to use that platform to sell it.
Hmm.
Yeah. But
interesting.
I
mean, Karen, you're in a public-facing line of work, too. How much is self-promotion, like how integral is it to what you do?
I think comedians are currently responsible for their ticket sales. Like, it's crazy to see people who are very, like Brian Cook's a great example, somebody who's very, very skilled, refuses to interact with social media, and then someone else who got a following from doing 70-second videos. And like, okay, who am I to say? If you can sell 600 tickets at the San Francisco Palace of Fine Arts and people will listen to you talk for an hour, like, is that enough? Does that make you a comedian? You know what I mean? Like, is that enough? You know? Because it is at the end of the day, I think this is just like such a fundamental I was, you know, I read some of the article too, Bess, and I was thinking about how I think it's always been a problem, like the intersection of like art and commerce. Like whenever you turn something that is a thing that you love or something that's an art into a thing that needs to make money, there will be an inherent conflict. And I just always think back in the day to like the Renaissance. Do you know what I mean? It's like, did like...
Totally.
Did those like Teenage Mutant Ninja Patronage Turtle... Yeah. Did they like, did they all like want to do all the Jesus stuff? Or were they like forced into, okay, well, I guess the Pope's like... doing the Sistine Chapel. So like, I mean, I guess I'll paint some Jesus. Do you know what I mean? Like what was the general, like, were they like, oh, I would have loved to do more nudes. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
I would love to see like the alt great masters, the like alt Da Vinci. He's like, this is, yeah.
I mean, it's funny because I feel like any world of art kind of is like, okay, success begets success, but at its worst, that means that the success of a topic or subject or way of doing things means that that is what's enforced on the next wave of people. So like, all right, you know, I remember maybe like a year and a half ago, everyone was talking about what's the next Yellowstone? We're going to make another Yellowstone. Oh, right. And all anybody wanted people to write, all the pitches that anybody wanted to hear were the next fucking Yellowstone. And like the reason Yellowstone was so big was because there was only one Yellowstone. And everybody who wanted to watch that kind of show watched the one Yellowstone. But when there's like 50 Yellowstones, that divides the audience up. That doesn't cause it to multiply by 50.
Right. Meetings I'm having, I mean, it's even like The Bear was something that didn't have a blueprint.
Yes.
Yellowstone is like a broadly appealing, commercially sort of down the line show with a big star, but now people want the next The Bear, but there's no, it I think it shows how sort of out of step with creativity the world of branding is. And I also think that, like, to Kieran's point, like, art and commerce have always intersected, even in the Renaissance, like with the Medicis. Like there's it's almost inauthentic to say like, ah, it's just pure art for art's sake. I think just now it's so much more naked. Like the front facing camera has made it inescapable that you are the brand. You know, it's humiliating, but it's a fact of art. If art didn't exist with commerce, then we'd all be buskers. You know, there has to be a machine behind it. There has to be a gallery to hang that in. There has to be a chapel to paint it on.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa, when you wrote your books, did you have a lot, did you have to do a lot of self-promotion? I know that you're not like a self-promoting type of person. How did it make you feel to have to
Oh my God. Well, it was before I had my IBS under control. So it was very, very stressful. Because you have to put it out there. See, here's the thing. Here's the catch 22 is that I hated promoting myself. I hated having to figure out how to make people interested in something I wrote about myself. Like that felt so profoundly gross. But at the same time, if I left the promotion up to the publisher and the people who worked with the publisher, their instincts were so bad. Like my second book had an essay about Monica Lewinsky, which I had written with Monica. Like Monica read it. We had like a whole moment together. And it was about growing up as the same age as Monica and how I felt then and how I felt now that and now that we're friends. Every single of everything I wrote in that book, profound things about Barack and Michelle Obama, everyone was like, we're going to excerpt the Monica chapter. And I was like, no, that's actually the opposite point of the chapter. Like, it is the opposite point. Like, using her as clickbait is the opposite of the point. And so then you're just like, you know what? I got it. I'll pitch my excerpts. I will pitch my podcast. I will pitch exactly how I want to at least be put out there, which is Erin knows intimately is like child-free but relatable. That's me. Not all the child-free are like Samantha Jones. But
hilarious.
But that was like they try to put you out in a different way than you want at least to be received. And so that is the what I would say the upside. And Bess, it's what I loved about how you promoted Buffalo Fluffalo so much. You just like read it and all these weird voices. I was riveted when I couldn't sleep. I'm like, let's see if Bess has posted a new reading from Buffalo Fluffalo in her Jewish aunt's voice from Miami or wherever she was from.
I mean, totally. To what you like, I think it comes out of the same discomfort that you had and also sort of bucking the instincts that you know are coming. Sometimes from people who have good market research and have tested it, you know, have shown that, like, yes, people respond well to this thing, but it doesn't necessarily map one-to-one onto me. And so I think the necessity of doing self-promotion, as, like, odious and annoying as it is, like, at least I get to control whatever narrative is out there about my work.
Right.
And it's silly to promote a children's book. It's not what I wrote an adult book. I write for TV. I've been commenting a lot about politics and especially in the Middle East. And I was like, whoa, people are coming to me for a certain type of content. And now they're going to see me write about me talk about a cartoon buffalo who, like, has big feelings. And so I had to do something silly to that because, like, the very fact of it is silly. Yeah. my publisher is just waiting for me to be like, oh, so weird, Prairie Dog says, and then just, like, have a.
Well, it's interesting because, like, we're all, like, well-rounded people that have many, many interests, but the projects that we might be promoting might be a little bit more narrow in scope than the entirety of our personalities.
Right.
And so if people are following us promoting one narrow thing that we produce, and then they find us talking about, like, the Middle East or abortion or whatever. Like, have you ever gotten scolded for not sticking to a lane that somebody decided that you belonged in, even though you're like, I never said I just belonged in that lane?
Never in book publishing. In TV, I had to be a little bit more careful. But, you know, there were definitely people who were like, hey, you have a Doctors Without Borders fundraiser on your profile. And, you know, I was going to buy your book. And I was like, well, then don't buy my book. That's fine. You know, that's right. I'm not just the project I'm promoting. There's also an entire person behind that.
And it also, like, it puts you in the position of having to be, like, an influencer.
Yeah.
Almost. Right. Like, Kieran, do you think that there is a way to be an artist in 2024 or a creative in 2024 and not have to be an influencer?
I think if you get very, very lucky, you know, then maybe that's, I think if you get very, very lucky, sometimes, like, the industry puts, like, the heft of their weight behind a certain person, or there's, like, a mystique or a lore, you know, but I think if it's anything where it's, you know, it's the one-to-one on, like, the ticket sales, you know, it's like, and it's a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword in stand-up. I will say this, because it's, on the one hand, I have so many friends who just didn't kind of have the love of the industry, but were very, very, very funny. But once they started posting clips online or they got really big on TikTok, they can sell out theaters now, you know? And that's a direct line of connection with your audience that's incredible in many ways, you know? The flip side, again, I remember my ex-boyfriend would be like, we all work for Mark Zuckerberg. Like, all, like, the algorithm, the algorithm constantly shifts. It's like you can have a following of a certain size, and then it's like your material isn't even getting to those people. You know, like when Facebook and when a lot of those algorithms started, it was just in chronological order of who posted what. And now it is not in chronological order. Now it is in, like, whatever is quote unquote successful enough. Everyone's copying everybody. You know, it's very much, and it's very unregulated too. So I do think there's a little bit of, like, that, the cash grab of, like, the 49ers, like, getting the gold out of the, you know, the river. You know, because it's, you don't know how long it's going to last.
Mm-hmm. I was like, the football team?
I was like, what are we talking about?
For a minute.
I was like, were they,
guys,
did they go to the river?
Everyone take a breath. Take a breath if you've met me.
We get it, Kieran. You know history.
Yeah. Foot game.
That's why I was upset, because I was like, Kieran has been abducted. This is her signaling that she needs help.
Yes.
She is talking about football. We need to call the police.
Hello. Thank
We're
you so
all
much.
We need to call the police. That football was implied.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for knowing my truth, Erin. I feel so seen. And thank you, Alyssa. You guys are like, what's happening? Why is she talking about foot game?
Like, wow, my God, Kieran, you've been hit.
Alyssa, same question. Do you think that there's a way to be somebody producing something creative and not get kind of pulled into the gravitational field of influencing?
No, it's so hard. I mean, like, I would not, but when we were promoting Pretty Baby for Hulu, it's like there was no, and this is no shade on anybody. It was just our project and we wanted it to do really well. And so we had to like go out to influence, we did like influencer kits and we're like, it was a dark time in my life when I was like, have we heard? Did Kim Kardashian get hers yet? Has she posted? So I myself don't think I can ever be an influencer, but even playing in the space, though I will say people ask a lot about my gray hair. I think I may have influenced a little gray hair. But other than that, you know, asking to me, there are like two kinds of people. There are people who are humbled that they were actually able to do something. Like when I think about my book or think about Pretty Baby, I couldn't believe we got it done. And the idea of having to take it and go out and be like, hey, can you repost this? Can you retweet this? Can you do this? It's like the darkest, but also a necessary part of the process. You know, it mattered. It mattered how many views when Kim Kardashian got her. We sent like a Polaroid kit. We sent an eyebrow kit because of Brooke and a couple other things. And it was like, They posted. Did the other one get it? And it mattered. And it like it mattered so much. But I don't know if any of it turned into views. I don't know if any of that meant that more people actually watched Pretty Baby. I just know that more people heard about it or at least saw that Brooke has an eyebrow kit.
I mean, and some of it seems to be like attention is I think sometimes where attention comes in is like the creator themselves doesn't want to just get attention for attention's sake, but the people who are trying to promote the project are like, any attention is
exactly
good attention.
That's exactly right.
The other thing about so many influencers, because I have a friend who works with a lot of influencers now, a lot of them are meme pages or it's all stolen content. A lot of the biggest pages are from 8 to 10 years ago and they're all, at least everybody here wrote their own book, you know, or it's like your stand-up or whatever it is.
It's
like
a good point.
So many of the biggest ones are like just internet memes from wherever. And like now, those people not only have influence, but they also are making a bunch of money in advertising and branded deals.
Mm-hmm. Bess, have you ever found that something that you have done or something you have said or something you've written has been just like scraped without credit and used on a big meme page?
All the time. I also,
how does that make you feel?
I had a child and I always just write about what's directly in front of me. I have no ability to, it's incredibly solipsistic. I had the child. I started writing comedy about being a parent and Romper, Pampers, Gerber, huge corporations, the brand of pajamas that I was buying, like setting an alert for when they went on sale, the magnetic me pajamas that like, you know,
yeah.
Have to do in the, they were using my shit to sell their products.
And
I like, thank God after a while. Oh, that was just Instagram. On Twitter, people would wholesale, like a friend.
But
of
wait,
mine,
Bess, did they sell you free? Did they send you free pajamas?
I've only received
No!
And by the way, and I don't ask. Like, I'm on this podcast because you directly DM'd me.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I don't ask. And I should. And, like, I have a post-it on for my Substack, which I give away my writing for free on. I have a post-it that my husband put on my computer that's like, charge. And it's here. Because, like, you know, he's like, we need them diapers. I'm like the rage. It's nice to be able to talk about it. I'm used to my jokes being stolen on Twitter. I don't really care about that. I'm like, look, they're not going to be able to come up with another joke and I can just keep writing them.
Right.
Like, it's fine. That's like from the cockiest side of me, but it's all, you know, but it's also like a non-confrontational side. But for this, when a corporation is profiting, you know, I'm somebody who does not post pictures of my kids on the internet. Mm-hmm. I do not post their names on the internet. I don't use them to make money. And when I see other people, it just goes so fucking against my like values when they do mm-hmm. that. And one time I DM'd and I was like, hey, I DM'd Gerber. And I DM'd them and I was like, hey, kind of as a joke, I was like, so crazy because I actually have the Gerber baby. And I sent a picture of my oldest kid and who's gorgeous objectively. And they were like, haha, love it. And I was like, no, like, I should just be direct. Like, please don't use my jokes. Without my, like, at least permission. I wasn't even necessarily asking to be paid, but, like, it would be nice to ask. There are a few people who have asked, and I remember them. That rant mm-hmm. over. But I will say, appendix to the rant. I'm lucky that there's enough of a following that people kind of snitch tag me when people steal my mm-hmm. stuff. And they're like, hey, credit mm-hmm. at Best Bell Kalb or whatever, Best Bell Kalb. And then people are kind of shamed into taking it down.
Good.
Or at least tagging
it. Yeah, you got to. Do any of you ever fantasize about just being able to totally disconnect, not have to do any personal branding whatsoever? And like, how does that life look for you? What would you do with the time that you normally spend having to self-promote? Alyssa, you go first.
So much more jam, obviously. So much more jam. It is even, but then even the jam I had to promote a little bit because I'm like, well, my friends took a swing and they're selling my jam. So I should like post it on Instagram. But at least that was like my thing and it was like totally for me. But if I could, because if you didn't have to deal, like I think I get on social media mostly to entertain myself. Like I try to curate things that will just make me laugh and give me a break. But if I could, didn't have to worry about myself or things that I do for a living, I think I could go without social media for the rest of my life. And I think I would read more books and I think that I would make more jam. And also while I have the opportunity, because you know who else does not like self-promoting? Erin. And this week's newsletter was very good. How to Annoy Your Fetus. Don't miss it. Like I said, child-free, but love the content.
Yeah. No, the reason I wrote that, and I will do a little bit of self-promotion here. The reason I wrote it is because, you know, I'm pregnant for the second time. I'm going to have a baby in June. And every week by week, like what to expect when you're expecting or like baby lists. Like you can go and say, oh, I'm 20 whatever weeks pregnant and like whatever. And it'll tell you your baby's the size of a papaya and this yeah. is where it, this is what it's doing developmentally. And they're suggesting all these things. Like you can interact with the fetus when it's like 18, 19 weeks old, theoretically, because they develop hearing. They develop like some very rudimentary sight type senses, whatever. It's all kind of like gray area primordial senses, right? But they're suggesting doing things like shine a flashlight at your
okay,
belly.
That was the one that I thought was the most deranged. That felt like flashbanging
so
your baby. It's like, what
You're
are you
so
doing?
Rude. Doesn't even have a consciousness. Barely knows what's going on. All it knows is like warm floating. You want me to shine a fucking flashlight at it? Yeah. You want me to put headphones on my stomach and play music? You want my husband to be like, hey, you in there. It's sleeping. Let it sleep. Anyway, so that's, I hate doing self-promotion, but that is a thing I feel very strongly about. So I have no problem conveying those feelings. I'm just don't, you don't need to bother your baby. Bess, you look like you want to say something.
I was listening. It's exactly, no, it's hazing your baby. It's horrible.
Yeah, no wonder they're so grouchy.
Yeah,
they
totally.
Come out, they're so mad.
I know.
They're so mad. Bess, do you fantasize about a life where you don't have to promote yourself at all? And what would you do with that time?
It's not a fantasy. It's the goal. The goal is that mm-hmm. your work sells itself. Like the goal is that you can,
right.
like, you know, the authors and the comedians that I respect, they don't have to, like, they get on social media because it's fun for them. It's their own form of entertainment. But the goal is that there's a team of people having stressful meetings about how to put it out there for you. While I'm on a, yacht drinking blood. That's the goal entirely. And I would scroll other people's social media and feel bad for mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
That's entirely the goal. I, you know, I have, I, this might be a side track. I have a theory about the influencer boxes because I had to do them for Yearly Departed.
What?
The ones at Alyssa. I think it has completely reversed now. I think it is a status symbol for the people who actually post them. Kim Kardashian's not going to post them. But the people who are low on the list who got them are like, look, this TV show thinks that I am worthy of getting an influencer box. Like that, I think it has now become the inverse of what it originated as.
Like, I've never gotten one, and I think about it.
Well, I will tell you, I know I got a pity one from when a friend did a project. They were like, we haven't, literally, it wasn't like, oh, it was like, we have an extra, do you want it? And I was like, totally, I would love free stuff.
You're like, let me post it, like I was on the list.
I didn't post it, but I remember the hideous urge to do it. I remember being like, I remember I was like, oh, so exciting because I wanted to promote her project. But I was also like, and look at me, which is like, oh, thank God I didn't. But like, I now know why people post them. And it's certainly not to like.
I matter.
Totally.
I matter.
And I think it's
I'm
the
important.
Inverse. I had to do them for Yearly Departed when we did the comedy special on Amazon. We did two seasons of this like all female and female identifying comedy special. And the meetings about these influencer boxes were all based on one that worked when it was the first influencer box. So it was cool. And all the cool people posted it. But the cool kids in the cafeteria aren't posting influencer boxes. They've moved on to something influencers haven't even heard of yet.
I feel like you got to get weird with it. You got to do the Dune popcorn bucket. You got to get
totally.
Like,
you got to fuck. You got to fuck your merch.
Yeah, 100%. Kieran, how would your life look in a world where you do not have to do any self promotion anymore?
Good. I think it would look nice. I think that you can put more deep work into the thing that you're excited about making, because I actually think they're and I think the article that you sent also speaks to this. It's like, I think they're kind of any like deep thinking work, I think, is putting together something an hour over time, whatever it is. Like, it's like, it takes quiet and constant and just a lot of like just time for your brain to almost daydream. And when you have a phone and you go to your phone and you always have something to look at and immediately satisfy you, I think we lose that time. You know, and it reminded me a little bit of like, you know, I made that documentary in Nepal, and I remember every time we would take that, every time we'd be in the jungle, it's like, you're in this amazing place doing this amazing thing, but your job is to document what is going on. That's your job. So you're not in the moment enjoying the thing because you're worried about getting the thing on camera. And I feel like with social media, when somebody's on a vacation, even when you're making jam, it's like, if everything is supposed to be documented, it fundamentally removes you one step from the moment. If somebody's in the middle of crying and they take a fucking picture of themselves crying and then they post that, do you know what I'm saying? It's just like, that means that you took yourself out of your emotion to comment on yourself. And I think there's something weirdly stunted about, you know, like operating that way, because we were never meant to be commenting. We were meant to be like, you know, living it and then the sweet release of death.
my favorite crying on camera post of all time, and I don't think this will ever be topped, but I want to say like 7 or 8 years ago, Ilaria Baldwin posted herself fake crying. You know it best. Bess knows it. Ilaria Baldwin on 9/11 posted herself fake crying in front of the 9/11 isn't funny, but this
so
is
beautiful.
Fake crying against a building with the Twin Tower lights, memorial lights in the background, and it is the greatest and most absurd and obscene crying photo I think I've ever seen posted to social media. It was incredible. It was great to have that support from the country of Spain for our national tragedy of 9/11. But yeah, I think, Kieran, you bring up a great point, and it's a good point to end on, which is that when we are constantly being dragged out of the space in which we need to be creative, then promotion becomes like kind of an enemy of the thing we're trying to do in the first place. And let's all throw our phones into the sea.
But also buy tickets to my...
Yeah, check out Kieran's socials. Check out Bess's socials. Check out everybody's socials because we got stuff to promote, okay? All right, quick break time. When we come back, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. If you found that this episode of Hysteria was able to chase your rage with a soothing balm of pettiness, make sure to like, subscribe, and share.
Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there. Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at CrookedCon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that celebrated the conjunction of Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day on Wednesday by getting their cross ashes as a tramp stamp. all right. Some announcements for the class. It's 2024. Abortion, trans, and gay rights, and whether our planet remains habitable for humans are on the ballot.
It's a lot, but Vote Save America's got you covered with a new initiative to help streamline your political giving for the year, the Anxiety Relief Program.
Just donate what you can each month, and VSA will take care of distributing 100% of your dollars where they're needed most. So far, over 500 recurring donors have joined the program and trusted VSA to make their dollar go further. But we still have a long way to go.
Head to VoteSaveAmerica.com to sign up now. Paid for by Vote Save America. VoteSaveAmerica.com, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
If you've run out of fresh crooked content for the day, no, you haven't. We have so much more to check out on YouTube. We have a series called This Fucking Guy, where we roast the men who deserve it most. And ladies.
Ladies can be guys. People. We roast people. Tommy has a new show with Brian Tyler Cohen called Liberal Tears, with rankings and drafts of everything political.
And Lovett has a new segment called What a Week, where he jokes about the early breaking news of the week.
For all of this YouTube exclusive content and more, you can head to crooked.com/videos to watch now.
Okay, let's move on to Sanity Corner /I Feel Petty. Alyssa, you start us off.
Guys, I have a Sanity Corner. It is earnest. I sat down last night and watched The Greatest Night in Pop on Netflix about the making of We Are the World. I sobbed myself into a sinus infection.
No.
Like, it was, because guys,
what a
honestly,
review.
If I were being truthful about myself, I was born to be Bob Geldof. You know, like, I like doing big events. Give me all the celebrities, but let me be behind the scenes. But what went in this instance, I was probably a little bit more Quincy Jones. But in this instance, what went into it, how they did it, the magic of, like, it's so incredible to think that something like that will probably never happen again because of social media and people's egos and how things are. But they stripped all 46 of the people who came in, all of the musicians. They did it the night of the American Music Awards, I think. So everyone was in LA. Bruce Springsteen drives himself over in like a beat up GTO. It was the most magical, inspiring, good vibes bullshit you could possibly want for yourself. And I recommend it 10 out of 10. And it did good work. But it was nice. Really, Cyndi Lauper gives like an amazing, it's everything you want to know and remember about, you know, these, and also I keep getting caught up in this shit because I'm like, I don't know, like my heroes are aging. Like I was so deep into the Tracy Chapman of it all. And so seeing this, I was like, oh my God, they were so young. Oh my God, she's not that much older than me. So anyway, it really made me feel warm. So if you want to feel warm, I recommend it highly.
Oh, that's pretty good. I will go next. I have a petty, okay. And it's very short. There was a profile of Mark Meadows in the New York Times, and it is hilarious. It is delicious. It is a big, long read. But if you just want to – you ever get the feeling that you want to have dessert, but you want it to be a dessert that takes a really long time to eat? You don't necessarily want a lot of dessert. You just want, like, a big pile of Skittles and then eat them. That's this piece of writing about Mark Meadows. He sounds like such a pathetic, whiny, snaky, slimy loser, and it's just delicious. But I wanted to read this one paragraph as like a little appetizer. Okay. After winning his Western North Carolina congressional seat in 2012, Meadows promised two different aides that they would be his chief of staff, only to award the job to a third person. Meadows informed one of the unlucky aides by text message that he was, quote, going in a different direction. The other aide, upon confronting Meadows face-to-face, was awarded a show of tears and the explanation that Debbie's afraid we'll have too much fun in Washington. Mark Meadows fucking cried when someone called him out on his bullshit.
Oh, my God.
That is a weak sauce behavior. So that's what I'm feeling petty about this week.
It's pretty
Kieran,
good.
Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty?
I'll go Sanny. First, I want to say that the filmmaker for The Greatest Night in Pop is a buddy of mine. We went to Parliament together last year. Yeah, and I remember when he was working on it. So it's very, I think he was really chuffed and so excited that it's had such a warm reception. He said it's been kind of like beyond his this guy named Bao Nguyen, lovely human and such a great filmmaker. So it's really
saw the name of the
credits. So that made me happy. That's a little you know, warm in your cold stony heart. Well, for the Sanny, I'll tell you. This is a little silly. I had an assault last year, which you guys know about. But then I had to get two surgeries on my nose. And one of the funniest, craziest things that you don't realize about like a surgery is like obviously some of the architecture inside of your face changes, but like my I just find this hilarious and delightful. Like my boogers are different. Like they're just different than they used to be. You know, it's like sometimes they like kind of crust up by the middle bit, but then more than that, it's like they're like longer now.
Up at the top.
Yeah, they're like longer formations. They remind me so much of like, you know, like the caves, like the stalagmites in the mm-hmm. Yeah. It's giving stalagmite, and it's I was like, oh my God, this is gross, but also maybe a little bit beautiful.
Wait, Kieran, when my sister listens to this, she's gonna die because we've been calling those kind of boogers stalagmites since the
80s. Okay, great. And do you find them like a little bit beautiful, or am I insane?
And painful.
Oh, are they painful? I don't know if they're painful, but I just there's something very. I just think the unexpected side effect of a thing that's like so small that no one would know it. I find it delightful and hilarious. And it really makes
truly, truly a simple pleasure, right?
Yeah.
The smallest, simplest pleasure.
I love the way Ryan's face is like, ooh, you know, you're like, nah. I didn't need this.
No, I talked about desert boogers the other week. I'm in no position to judge people discussing their boogers. Bess.
Hi.
Can you do Sanity Corner? I Feel Petty. Which one are you going to pick?
I feel petty all of the time, so I need a Sanity Corner. And my Sanity Corner has been a friend's podcast because it's like I have her in my ears talking to her smarter friends. Her name's Alex Schwartz. She is one of the co-hosts of The Critics at Large with Vincent Cunningham and Nomi Fry. Is it illegal to? Oh my God. I'm not Hysteria no. Listeners should listen to Hysteria first, then Critics at Large. But she's always been my smartest friend since I was like 15. And every time I write something, this is like a love letter. This is my goddamn Valentine's Day. Every time I write something, I have Alex in my head, and now she knows. She's not going to listen. Is she going to listen to this, or do I just listen to her? Every time I write something, I think about her, and now, like, when I've been going through, like, if there's like stressful kid health things, I just put that on. And then I hear Alex talking about like the culture and talking about comedians and talking about like Jean Le Carré movies and all kind and like talking about Barbie and all kinds of stuff. And I just have her talking to her smarter friends. And I feel like I've just gotten off a conference call where I've been like listening in. And so that's been, now she knows, like, as I'm like doing school pickup, I listen to her having smart conversations with smarter people than me.
That is like such a relaxing experience to listen to really smart people talk, but also you don't have to participate in the conversation.
Oh, it's so nice. Maybe that's why. Maybe I'm just like, totally.
All right. That is all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Beskal, thank you so much for joining us. This was great. Please come back again sometime.
Thank you so much for having me. I will take you up on that. This is a dream. Thank you, guys.
Oh, my gosh. Kieran Deal, thank you for joining us and being a longtime love of the show and our audience and me. And Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die this week and every week. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. And there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. There's a lot going on in 2024. Luckily, there's someone to help us sort through it all and give us a laugh while doing it. Jon Stewart returns to the host chair on The Daily Show to share satirical takes on the news, politics, and cultural moments that are impacting our lives. The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast offers daily episodes fine-tuned for your ears, along with the biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Tommy from Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics to talk about how to fix this mess. Even President Obama made a surprise appearance. We're doing it all again November 5th to 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcasts, panels, and workshops. Plus, there'll be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get tickets at crookedcon.com. If you're a friend of the pod, you get a discount too. See you there.